Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota has recorded our first case of multisystem inflammatory syndrome in a child. Research scientists are learning more about the tentacles of SARS-CoV-2, and cities across the nation are grappling with opening up, surges in cases, and locking back down. It's time for our weekly check-in on what we know about COVID-19 here in South Dakota, and joining us this week is Dr. Jason Knudsen. He's a family medicine physician with Avera. Dr. Knudsen, thanks for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
What kind of questions do you get on a weekly basis? Do you find that patients and families are settling into a basic foundational knowledge, or are people still asking some of those very basic questions about when should I get tested and what kind of symptoms am I looking for? What sort of phone calls are you getting?
It's kind of a mixed bag, actually. There are a lot of the population knows a lot about it. And then, some people don't know nearly enough about it, and it kind of depends on what a person's news source is. And but for the most part, people are, gaining more understanding of what we're up against all the time, I think.
Yeah. The number one thing I get from people in my circle is these mixed messages of, I went somewhere and no one was wearing a mask, nobody was keeping distant, mm-hmm. I'm not sure what we're supposed to be doing, they say we don't have to do it here. So let's kind of go over some of this. What should we be doing right now in South Dakota? What kinds of precautions would you like to see people taking?
So that's a great question. That is, I think, the number one question anybody could be asking right now. And the people who are asking that question are exactly right. I think there are mixed messages, and there are mixed messages all around us. So the number one thing that people can be doing right now is wear a mask. It's not fun. It's not comfortable, but it's not that bad. And it definitely can save a lot of people's lives. And I think one of the things that came out not too long ago is that if you have 80% of the population wear a mask when they're in public, COVID pretty much goes away. So that's a big, big thing. So if, 80% of the population would just do that, or all of us would do that, we wouldn't have to worry a whole lot. For example, if I have COVID and I don't know it, or maybe I know it or don't know it, and I wear a mask and I'm in public, the chances of me giving that to somebody else are slim to none. But if I have COVID and don't know it and I don't wear a mask, those odds go up extremely high, about 70% actually. So wearing that mask is a huge thing for everybody to do. And if there's one thing that I could convince everybody to just do, even for, a month or two or something like that, if we really wanted to shut this down, that's what we would do.
What can we do differently if everybody is wearing a mask? If for some reason you're having, let's say, a 4th of July party and you have control over it, and everyone in the backyard is
yep.
masked up, can do you still have to keep distant as well? Do you or
you should.
Can you? Yeah, tell us a little
bit
about that.
You should. It's the 6 feet definitely helps too. There's no doubt about that. If you wanted to be very safe, your gathering would be outside. People would be wearing a mask, and you'd be 6 feet apart. But the mask is the most important part, but being outside really helps as well.
Yeah. Why are people not getting that message? What is the hesitation with the masking? And I'm leading toward this idea of, the confusion over some of the information we were given early on in the pandemic because of the shortage of masks. And now here we are, and, we're saying, hey, 80% of people wore them. We could keep our businesses open. We could keep things going, and we couldn't, we wouldn't necessarily have to go back into lockdowns. That's a pretty significant,
mm-hmm.
impact if we all embrace this.
Yeah. So the question is, why has that happened?
Yeah. What do you think the confusion or the hesitation is? Well, why aren't we getting to that 80% mask level?
Well, number one, it's annoying to wear a mask, and people just want to be normal again. A lot of people say, I'm just done with it. I am so done with COVID. And I get that. I understand that. But the problem is that, COVID isn't done with us. And the reality is it's with us, and it's probably with us for a while. And it becomes a big deal to everyone when they lose somebody, or somebody gets really sick in their family. Then it's a big deal. So you might have people who maybe thought mask wearing wasn't a big deal and that COVID wasn't a big deal, and someone in their family gets terribly ill or dies or one of those two, and all of a sudden they understand it's a big deal. And it's spreading all across the nation again. So it's unfortunate. The other part is that it's become political, which is so frustrating to me because coronavirus has nothing to do with politics. It doesn't care if you're a Democrat, a Republican, or an independent, but it seems it has become political a little bit, and I hope that changes in the near future. But there are a lot of mixed messages out there, and I think, you know, if we are, I think Dr. Fauci said it best the other day when he said, if we're going to tackle this, we're going to have to tackle it together, and that means everybody. So I think that was something that he said that was really, really good.
I think now is a good time to remind people, because early on we were hearing so many stories of people getting sick and what this really feels like and what it does to your system, short term and long term. And, mm-hmm. and we don't hear that as often. But for people who are getting sick, this is not just your average seasonal influenza.
Oh no, it's pretty nasty. The confusing part is that you just never know how it's going to affect you. A vast majority of people are going to be less sick than influenza. They're going to have maybe no symptoms, or a stuffy nose, or a cough, or diarrhea, or and in most cases they wouldn't think anything of it. But then you might have a 23-year-old, mother of two who dies, or a 40-year-old dad, or, I mean, it's just across the board. We just don't know how it's going to affect each individual, and some people get extremely ill to the point where they are on a vent or passing away, and some people have, zero symptoms. So that's what makes it so difficult. And people pass the virus along before they're sick for at least 2 days most of the time. And like I said just a second ago, a lot of these people aren't going to even have symptoms, so they don't know they're spreading it to other people. So that's where that, the mask wearing universally is so important, because there's so much spread going on when people don't have any symptoms and they don't know they're spreading it.
Yeah. Tell us about this multi-inflammatory syndrome. I'm sure many parents are keyed into this. In the beginning days, we weren't really sure what the impact was on kids. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing at least some children are having some pretty serious problems with this infection.
Right. It is scary. And there was a lot of comfort in knowing at the beginning, or falsely knowing from what we know now, falsely knowing that it really doesn't affect kids very much. And it was hard to understand why. I don't know for sure if anybody knows that answer yet, why it, was leaving kids alone. And it didn't bother kids when they were the ones that would spread it the easiest, you would think. So, mm-hmm. So when the news came out, with the kids getting, the multi-inflammatory symptoms, it is much scarier, and it is dangerous. It doesn't happen a lot, but it seems to be happening more frequently. So, that's definitely a worry.
Do we have any idea why some people get so very, very sick? And I was reading a study this weekend about looking at the virus and seeing its sort of tentacles and how it grabs onto other cells. But it seems to have such vastly different impacts on different people's bodies. Are scientists coming up with any reasons for that yet?
I don't know that. I haven't read anything about that yet, explaining why some people get more sick. Now, we know that if you're pregnant, or if you have cardiovascular disease or asthma, we've known those things for quite a while. I think they actually just added pregnancy to that list. For a while it was unknown, so we kind of put pregnancy on that list because we assumed, because you're immunosuppressed a little bit when you're pregnant. But I just don't know that we understand why some people are affected so badly and some are not. It could have something to do with the viral load. Some people say like if you just barely get a hint of the virus and you inhale that virus and there's very little in there, maybe that allows your symptoms to be less severe. Whereas if you get a huge load, somebody coughing in your face or singing right in your face or something like that, maybe that gives you more of the virus, so maybe that makes you more ill. But I don't know if there's any firm evidence on that yet. There's none that I've seen.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about antibody testing, because this is something that's available now in the community, but it has limited application for personal, you know, use. And what, who should be getting antibody testing, and what should we be doing with the information that we get from a test like that?
That's a great question, too. And it's actually very fascinating, but it's a tough answer. So antibody testing is phenomenal, and I think it's very important, but it's really good for studying things. And at this point, I can't tell you what that means for you or any of my patients. I can tell them that pretty much I can tell them if they had COVID or not. Avera's test is very accurate, and it's been a great test so far. But the big question is, what do we do with that information? So if you get the test and you show up that you have IgG to COVID-19, we can pretty safely assume that you had COVID, but that doesn't mean I can tell you that you won't get it again. It doesn't tell you, I can't tell you how long that immunity will last. I can't even tell you that you're immune now. You just have IgG right now. Some of the worrisome information we're getting is that in people who have mild symptoms, the antibodies are going away or the immunity is going away in a fairly short period of time, and that's not what we want to hear at all. So antibody testing can be great. It's great for studying things, but at this point, we can't tell you what it means. We can only tell you if you had it or didn't, but it doesn't. We can't tell you that you're protected. We can't tell you that you're safe. We can't tell you that you can go, you know, hang out with people, other people who have had it for sure, because there could be other strains out there. So that part is frustrating, but it is a piece of the puzzle, and I think it will become more valuable as time goes on when we get more data on what that does mean.
If people voluntarily get these this antibody test, is that information being shared from a public health standpoint? Are there efforts to collect statewide data about antibody testing to sort of understand the path of this disease in South Dakota?
I don't know if the state is. At Avera, we're tracking all of that and studying all of that. I'm guessing the state has some or will get some information too, but I don't know that information. But we at Avera are tracking that material.
Yeah, that's a good question to follow up on here. And this goes back to this broader question of like when this started. One of the, and I know I'm asking a lot of people now, Dr. Knudsen, about like, you know, going back 100 days, what do you wish you knew then that you didn't know now? You know, we're so much more prepared now, but we still have some of the big unknowns. And almost universally, people are saying, I wish that the efforts for testing, you know, were more coordinated. I wish we'd gotten those tests early. We really could have made a difference with some of that, the sort of consistency. Do we have that now? Do we have the volume of testing and testing protocols in place to where we feel like we're doing better now that we can do better?
So 100 days ago, I would have wished for more testing. And we needed it badly. I think, you know, pretty much the whole country was under the same boat. For example, most people would call in and with symptoms of COVID, and for half of the people, they couldn't get a test just because there weren't enough tests. We had to limit it only to the people who had the health problems, basically. They were in a high-risk situation, so we would offer it to them. So our numbers were probably much higher 100 days ago than we thought. In across the country, I'm sure that would be the same. But right now, the testing is way better, but it's still not nearly enough. For example, the CDC just came out and said that we should start testing asymptomatic people in high-risk groups like like colleges and, you know, workplaces that have a lot of people possibly, or just all of the young population, all millennials get tested even if they're asymptomatic. We just don't have enough tests for that. I mean, those tests would go so fast. And then if you test once, that's fine. But, you know, what goes to say they don't, you know, get coronavirus the next week? So If we could get more tests, that would be great. I would have asked for more 100 days ago, and I'd still ask for more now. Although it's greatly improved, we're still probably not near to where we need to be.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have been making that comparison between, say, an HIV test. We're saying, yes, you can leave from getting your results and then immediately infect yourself, but ongoing testing and the availability of that is an important component to this controlling of this larger deadly virus. Is there a less invasive test? Have the tests evolved? Because I've heard some people say, I got tested and no, it was the Q-tip that kind of feels like it's going into your brain. And other people are like, no, it's like a nasal swab just in the outer part of your nasal passage. So are people getting different kinds of tests?
Yeah, so we're very excited about that. We are so the predicament is this. So we're hoping that South Dakota can continue to keep our numbers fairly flat, and South Dakota has actually done a very nice job, and we've gone from the number one hotspot in the country to a state where the cases are fairly low. The worrisome part is that some of the states around us are jumping up pretty dramatically right now, so we're definitely not out of the woods yet. But the big kicker here is, what do we do in the fall, right? What do we do when people start getting more colds, when people start getting influenza, when people start getting strep tests? It's really hard to get those tests and run them or draw them in a clinic and run them in the clinic's labs because we don't have the safety precautions. So, for example, if I do a strep test in the clinic and I run that in my clinic and the patient has COVID and they aerosolize that, well, that just, your lab is completely contaminated at that point. So the predicament is, what are we going to do in the fall? So what we're thinking about and what we think we're going to do is come up with self-testing where people can get COVID testing and hopefully influenza or strep testing or maybe all of them. But the influenza one we are working on, but the COVID one we have ready. And all people do is they swab the inside of their nose. They don't have to tickle their brain or anything like that. And they turn it in and we run it for them. So that way they don't have to come in. We could give them the swab in their car. They swab it and then they hand it right back to us. That would be something that we could do and is much less invasive and it's really easily tolerated. And the data on those so far are phenomenal. They're basically the same accuracy as doing the brain tickling one, the nasopharyngeal one.
Fascinating. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dr. Jason Knudsen is a family medicine physician with Avera. Anything else, Dr. Knudsen, you want to leave us with? I'm going to go back to, hey, by the way, if 80% of you are wearing masks, we could really kick this thing. So masks are still a good idea. Anything else
they
you want to
really
add to that?
That's the big thing. So, social distancing and wearing a mask. And, I want people to have fun. I want our economy to do well as best we can. And the best way to shut down COVID and to make our economy run is to wear a mask. And I'm hoping we don't learn that the hard way. I'm hoping we can just change those behaviors and start doing it more frequently. But, it may require us learning it the hard way. I don't know. But hopefully if we can wear masks in the places where we're supposed to wear them, we'll do really well and get things back to normal faster than we think.
Dr. Knudsen, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.